This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here continuing our Fish 101 series, talking to fishy artist Ray Troll. How's it going, Ray?
It's gone wonderful. I'm sitting here on my porch in sunny southern southeast Alaska in Ketchikan and looking out at the cruise ships and the fishing boats going by. Life is good.
Is it really sunny there, or are you pulling our leg?
No, it's really sunny here, yes. This is after we had like 4 or 5 days of torrential rain and, yeah, near floods. But, hey, no, the sun is shining, and, yeah, it's a great day.
Right on. Well, can you tell our listeners out there who may not know your art? I mean, they're probably around it, but what's a good way to recognize it? How would you describe it to someone?
Well, you'll probably see it on a T-shirt if you haven't seen it before, and it's usually got a fish in it, and it's usually got some smart alecky sort of, or I hope somewhat clever and sometimes just sort of silly phrase associated with it and jokey stuff. And, yeah, so that's typically how people know my stuff. But I do other stuff, but, yeah, fish are kind of what I'm about.
Why clothing?
Why clothing?
Yeah.
Well... looking around as an artist, you know, I like to put my stuff on, spaces, and, people wear these wonderful, garments all the time. We humans like to wear clothing, especially in Alaska, and, it seems like a good place to put art, and, I don't know, the t-shirt phenomenon in the early 80s, there was kind of an idea that, you know, there had been these kind of phrases and stuff that had been on t-shirts, but it was kind of an idea that, well, you know, if you actually put some really cool art on shirts. And I was actually went to school for printmaking, so I knew how to, you know, pull a squeegee and print a t-shirt, and I'd done a little bit of that. And that's, over the years, I've done a bunch of them. So, and they're out there. Pretty much all up and down southeast Alaska and up into other parts and down the coast. And every now and then they show up in odd places. But, people buying them shirts.
Well, why do you think fish are so cool?
Well, how long do we have? Why do I think fish are so cool? And actually, well, people have asked me why I draw them and, you know, why? Why fish? When I stumble into a topic, I tend to keep on going, I stumbled into the topic of fish when I arrived in Alaska. It seemed to be a huge part of the economy here, and there's this whole fish culture up here, and there are just so many aspects to fish, and, I hope you've been exploring those many aspects of, fish and here in Fish 101, but, just endlessly fascinating. But, well, number one, there's just so many of them. There are 25,000 species of fish, roughly, in the oceans and rivers and lakes of the world. Within that, there's just all kinds of diversity. There's every color and shape imaginable, you know, and the sharks are nested within that group, the cartilaginous fish, within the bony fish. And then, of course, there's the living stuff. There's the ancient stuff, too, so I like digging around in the fossil record. My first love in life was dinosaurs, and so I'm always interested in the, where do these things come from? So there's all kinds of just even more wonderful fish when we start digging around in the past, but it's just endlessly fascinating, and, you know, a good chunk of my life has been dedicated to extolling the virtues and wonders of fish.
Why do you think it's important to educate folks about archaeology and those aspects?
Well, archaeology is actually, to get nerdy on here, archaeology is a study of human history, prehistory. Paleontology is basically all of life.
So
I had to get nerdy on you there, but
paleo is
I think it's an important thing to know. You know, who we are and where we come from and where life is and where life has been. And only by knowing the past do we know what we're facing right now in the present world and, you know, what's happening to the planet. So in order to know where we're going, we got to know where we've been. And I think it's really as simple as that. So it's just knowledge, it's knowing, you know. It makes you feel grounded, makes you know where you're, well, you know, things are in the world. And one of the wilder aspects of fish, and I kind of hesitate to even go into the topic, is that's where we all come from, too. So we actually are descended from a line of fish. Humans, and basically all backbone vertebrates, are derived from lobe-finned fish, so mammals, reptiles, amphibians. They're all descended from a fish that left, a group of fish that left the oceans 375 million years ago. So when you really look through the world, look at the world through fish-colored glasses, you see, oh, wait a minute, we actually belong to the fish group. So it's another mind-bending kind of thing about them. So it's, like I said, it's just endlessly fascinating.
Where do you come up with your ideas for these T-shirts? Or your snarky things you were talking about?
Less snark, more bark, or no, snark, yes. Snarky, yeah, I like that word. Where do they come from? They come from almost anywhere. Sometimes just a passing phrase I might hear, you know, I may actually mishear something, or I might misread a headline and go, oh, wait. And other times they just occur to you in the middle of a conversation, but other times they're right under your nose and you don't even realize them. And then sometimes people write them into me and bounce them off of me, and get a lot of them bounced off of me. And most of the time they're kind of like, well, thank you very much. That was kind of interesting. And, you know, mm-hmm. I'll kick that one around for a while. But my deal is since I've been at this for a while, if I do actually use an idea that people bounce off me, I reciprocate with a dozen T-shirts and my eternal gratitude, and I'll shout out your name forever. And sometimes they literally come to me kind of in a dream. You know, I'll wake up and there'll be an idea there. I keep notebooks with me, sketchbooks. I usually have 3 or 4 sketchbooks going at any one time. You know, ones that I travel with, one that's out in my studio, one that's next to the bed. And you have to kind of catch those ideas. And now, actually, with the with smartphones, I can actually tell my phone, and it will remember for me, too. So,
excellent. So how's technology changed the way you do your art?
Wow, that's a good question. Well, I'm a mixture of old school and new stuff. I pretty much draw and paint. So the actual analog stuff. I just really like, you know, pencil to paper, the most simple of things, and crayons to paper. In fact, I'm doing a bunch of crayon drawings now, just like I did when I was 4 years old. But then also I'll do pen and ink drawings and then scan them and have them at high resolution. And then I got myself a Wacom tablet. Some people say a Wacom, but a digital tablet, maybe about 10 years ago now. So there's pen and ink at first and pencil, but then I'll do digital color. So Photoshop. And I'm sort of gingerly surfing around the world of Illustrator, a different program, and I've actually been kind of collaborating with some animators recently, and so it's been fun to see some of my stuff actually, you know, get up and move around, which is pretty cool.
Where can people see the animations?
There's a couple kind of funky little YouTube clips. I'm working on some stuff that'll go up on YouTube. But there is a film, a salmon film, that will be coming out. It's kind of doing the festival circuit right now, and hoping, I don't know if it'll get into general release, but it's called The Breach. And I collaborated with a post-production guy. There was a director by the name of Mark Titus came up here, and he brought in a guy who does the animation, ended up, you know, collaborating with him to make some of these things move. And so there's a lot of it featured all throughout the film. I ended up doing some work in that. So I'm pretty excited about that. So that's coming out sometime this fall.
Very cool. Your designs are a little bit edgy sometimes. Do you ever find yourself censoring what you're putting out there?
maybe I should be. My wife is my first filter, my first audience, my wife Michelle. And sometimes, actually, what she usually does to stop me in my tracks is she'll say, you know, can you imagine your daughter wearing that shirt? And so I that will usually, okay, that's right, I'm not going there. So yeah, they are sometimes, yeah, they're, but you know, I mean, that's, I think the role of an artist is to kind of push boundaries a bit. And yeah, there's maybe some stuff posthumously that might come out that was like even more shocking, but yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff in the notebooks that may never see the light of day and probably shouldn't, but, no, I think that's an artist's role in society is to, and that's what the way I kind of look at the t-shirts and the fishy stuff is, it's basically kind of different aspects of the fish culture and people are wearing these things. And, you know, sometimes, like I said, they're just silly jokes and there's really nothing much more to them than that. And other times they work at different levels and sometimes they do either purposely or unintentionally, you know, press some buttons. So. Well, I'm sorry, did I do something? Did you see one time that, like, you didn't like?
Oh, no, I just saw them at Nuts Alaska Outfitter as a kid and just went, did he put that on a T-shirt?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm damaging the youth again. I'm just a bad influence. I don't know. But I'm kind of proud of my bad influence, so I don't know. So yeah, actually, so the generations have grown up looking at these things. So yeah, and you are one of them, I guess.
You betcha. And you recently did the 40th anniversary folk festival design.
Yeah,
like?
Yeah. Well, it was a lot of fun to do that, and I've been kind of exploring my garage band roots from junior high, and kind of got back into music about 10 years ago, and finally started bringing my band up to Folk Fest, which I stupidly had missed all these years. And living in Alaska for 30 years, I only really started going eight or so years ago. But what a wonderful thing. And so I'm kind of late to the party, but as soon as I showed up, people said, you know, you ought to do a Folk Fest T-shirt. So they asked me a couple times, and then when I knew the 40th was coming up, and there's such a great tradition of great art that's happened with all those posters and shirts over the years. So I was real honored to be asked, but I had to carve out the time in my schedule. And I thought, you know, maybe the 40th. And so they asked, and I said, okay. And I committed to doing it. And I, you know, it's when I tell folks, if you hire Ray Troll, you get Ray Troll. So I just I sat down, did a couple scribbles of some different ideas, but basically kind of a big sort of fishy folk festy musical party. And there's fish all over in there, but there's also some bears and sea lions, and everybody's playing musical instruments. And yeah, no, it's fun. It's great to see the shirts there and see them all go away over the course of 3 days. It's a week-long thing, so by the end of the week, there's just nothing left. It was great.
You bet.
And they're not making any more.
No? No re-release?
No, I don't. That's kind of the tradition. So that's the thing. You got to go to Folk Fest and get them at Folk Fest. So,
are you doing anything special for Shark Week?
Oh, I've been doing some Facebook posts with sharky stuff, and yeah, I've done shark stuff over the years. I have an exhibit down in Tacoma right now at the Point Defiance Zoo and Aquarium. It's a shark exhibit. It's a very weird shark. So I'm hoping that maybe they're seeing a little bump in attendance down there, Point Defiance. It's up until the end of the year. So I've been kind of promoting that. And, and also posting some pictures of cool Alaskan sharks. We get them up here, you know. And we even have great white sharks up here.
Hard to believe.
Hard to believe, but yes, there's one that washed up in Ketchikan on the shores of Gravine Island in 1978. There's one in Yakutat not too long ago. So they actually do range up here. They're cold water sharks. So, you know, keep that in mind when you go to the beach. You know, that doesn't mean to fear them, but just be aware of them. And there's never been a shark fatality in Alaska. There's always hope. I could be the first. I want to be the guy. I'll take it for the entire state. So.
Well, what's next for Ray Troll? Where do you see your art taking Southeast Alaska?
Well, I have been kind of playing with some of the film things and maybe some more collaborations with the animator. We're talking about some stuff. I played Salmon Stock with my band and hoping to get the band out there. But I'm working on a book on basically fossils of the West Coast. And I've been doing a lot of the prehistoric life of Alaska. So I really have been delving way deep into my childhood roots and drawing Alaskan dinosaurs and woolly mammoths and these great big ichthyosaurs that we find here actually in southeast Alaska. So I've got a whole pile of that stuff. That's coming out in the book that's called The Eternal Coastline. It's about a year and a half out, really. Hoping to have that be an exhibit that gets around the state. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, great. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. And I have a track from the Ratfish Wranglers.
Oh, goodness. What are you going to play?
Cannery Girl, of course.
All right. Cool. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
I am waiting on a girl.
Waiting on a girl.
Waiting on a girl.
They're waiting on me.
I am waiting on a girl.
Got slime all down her dress.
Yeah, I'm waiting on a girl.
And she's a bloody mess.
Oh, I truly love her. I gotta confess. I'm waiting on a girl.
Got entrails in her hair.
Yeah, I'm waiting on a girl.
And she don't really care.
Oh, rubber boots and heavy hands are her fire. I'm waiting on a girl.
And it's getting pretty late.
Yeah, I'm waiting on a girl.
And I can plainly say,
oh, she's more fun than a bucket full of bait. Yeah. Well, I saw it for the first time walking down the dock. She had a humpy head in her hand. It really turned me on the way she packed her. So I really want to understand my eyes.
Cannery girl, I love my can cannery girl.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cannery girl, I love my can cannery girl.
Oh yeah. I'm waiting on a girl.
She's so good with a spoon.
I'm waiting on a girl.
And she's crazy as a loon.
I'm gonna meet her, yeah, in the smokehouse room. Oh, I'm waiting on a girl.
She's so goddamn cute.
I'm waiting on a girl.
And there is no substitute.
Oh, when I meet her in her birthday suit. Oh, yeah, but I'm waiting on a girl.
And I'm standing in the rain.
Yeah, I'm waiting on a girl.
And I can't stand the pain.
Oh, come September, oh, she'll get on that plane.
Oh, baby, goodbye, honey.
Oh, it broke my heart when I read that note. She's still lying on the break room floor. She said she's going home to her mom and dad. Oh, I guess I'll never get this score. Oh, my.
Cannery girl. I love my cannery girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cannery girl. I love my cannery girl.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was Ray Troll and the Ratfish Wranglers and their song Cannery Girl. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here in the studio with Melissa McCormick and Cindy Isaac of Suite 907.
Hi, Annie. How are you today?
Good. And yourself?
Good.
Hi. Thanks for coming on the show. So tell me about Suite 907. It's a new space, right?
It is. It's the newest club and event center in Juno. So we have a club on the weekends, but it's also designated as an event facility as well. So we can host anything from conferences and meetings and luncheons to wedding celebrations and events in the evening as well.
And how, your club, is this like the only one in Juneau? Or?
Yes, and I guess we're the only ones in the state of Alaska that have the LED lit dance floor, the only one in the state. So it's amazing to see. You really just have to kind of come and check it out. It's hard to describe on the radio, but you can go to our website and see pictures of it or come and check it out anytime after 5 p.m.
How would you describe it to folks who may have only explored downtown's bar scene?
It's over 7,000 square feet. We can have up to 475 people in there. It's been completely remodeled top to bottom. We try to mirror some of the clubs of Las Vegas, so it's very beautiful inside. We have crystal chandeliers. We also have LED lights where we can customize the colors in there. So say you have a wedding reception that their main wedding color was like hot pink, we can turn all the bars and the islands and the VIP sections with to freeze that color so that it's basically color-coded for their wedding. Other than that, when the lights are on, they fade to different colors and such. But, yeah, it's beautiful. It's an absolutely beautiful space. Everything's been remodeled. Bathrooms, walls, floors. It's just we really put our hearts into that.
What were some of the challenges you didn't expect?
Well, you know, this is new to me. I own a travel agency and a gym, so this was a whole new venue, and thankfully I brought Melissa in, who already was experienced in event planning with her business Creativation. And so we've worked together in the past, and so part of it is just getting the word out and marketing and getting people to understand that it's not just a bar, that it is an event center, and yes, there's a bar in it. We do have the full liquor license, so we're able to have that for people's activities, but we're truly trying to reach out to the community and be something for everybody. That's why we're doing an underage young adult night tomorrow night, ages 17 to 20. We just got approved from the city to make it a D designation. So we want to have something for them, and then sports on Sunday. We have 12 TVs. So we're just trying to have different events for different people.
What kind of events besides the arts and culture events have you had out there so far?
Well, they have karaoke night on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
They do a taco Tuesdays. We're going to be doing, we had a Latin night, which was really fun. We had a DJ come in from Anchorage, and we did some Zumba dancing. So we're going to be having some of our local Zumba instructors come in and do some Zumba lessons as well. The dance floor is just amazing for Zumba. It really is. You know, when you do classes down south, there's the big mirrors and things, but when you get on that dance floor, you don't even care what you look like. It's just really fun to just dance on the floor. And even I do it, and I don't dance in front of anyone, so it's a lot of fun. As far as some of the other events that we have, as Cindy mentioned, we have the youth event that just got approved. And so we really wanted to have that 17 to 20-year-old group be able to come in, enjoy coming and dancing. We're going to have root beer. We'll have pizza. We'll have spritzers, Red Bull spritzers and things for the kids. And just a fun, safe place for kids to come. There is a $10 entry for that, but there will be no liquor signs anywhere. If you come in the facility, you'll notice that there's no beer signs hanging anywhere. There's no beer signs hanging over by the pool tables or anywhere. It's just a very nice, clean facility. And when we do the youth nights, all of the alcohol will be pulled and stored. We don't want to have any risk of anyone getting into anything. So we hope to have some other events. We've spoke with a couple of the other Christian groups in town. We're going to have a Young Life event up there in October. And then we're going to have some business events. This Friday, we're doing a business opening from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., and we've invited our business community to come out and take a look. JCVB is doing an after-hours event. We're going to have some snacks and some drinks for people to come and see what this place is all about and what kind of events you can host in there.
What events are you guys most looking forward to?
I love the private party and reception aspects. I also like the business meetings. We're looking to do fundraisers. I know we have Midnight Suns is looking to host a wine tasting fundraiser there. I love all these candidates that are out right now. I would love to house and host fundraisers for them. I mean, we're really open to anything. We have all the business tools that they would need with the PowerPoints and the podiums and tables and chairs. And like I said, we can have up to 475 people. We're also looking towards future events. Like we've had a lot of feedback. We're talking about hosting like a country night. We're talking about hosting some type of a formal night that used to be kind of like the Tuxedo Junction that Juno used to do many years ago. There's those. And then we actually are bringing up a band for a concert on August 29th, and their name is the Common Kings. And 2 weeks later, they're touring on a world tour with Justin Timberlake. So
no.
A lot of people don't know the name Common Kings, but if you Google them and listen to their music on YouTube, they're amazing. And they've got to be good if they're going with Justin Timberlake for 2 months on a world tour. So please, please come check them out. And that's August 29th. We really want to sell that show out for them. And then from here, they go up to Anchorage and play.
Great. And I heard that you guys have a dress code out there when it's club hours. Can you tell me more about that?
Yes, the dress code is dress nice, you know. I mean, no extra tufts. Let's give it a break from the extra tufts.
Although we did talk about having an extra tough night, like a tough Tuesday, so that everybody can wear their rubber boots that night, because I just know women want to. But go ahead, Melissa.
But I think what we want to encourage is people, you know, just dress up, look a little nicer than, you know, no cutoff jeans, no shorts. You know, try to just look a little nice. I love to see all these women coming in with these gorgeous heels and just really, you know, someplace to go and dance. The Latin night was really fun because it was exciting to see all of these really incredible dancers that I didn't even know were in Juneau. And so we are going to be working with some of the arts council groups, too. We've already spoken with, you know, Juneau Jazz and Classics, and the Jazz Divas might come in there and do a show one night. We've talked to Tom Loker. He might come in and do a set up there. So we really want to encourage a lot of different kinds of events because we really do have an amazing facility. So you really just have to come and see it to believe it, and that's the best way I can describe it, because what I'm explaining to you over the radio is not going to give you the visual that you need.
And where is it located?
It's above Donna's restaurant in the Valley, right behind, what bank is that?
Denali.
Denali Alaska Bank. It's on the second floor, so it is where the landing strip and Marlantini's used to be.
So. There's a big rock entry with brand new door. I mean, everything, even the outside, was redone just to give it a beautiful look.
Great. And where can people find more about your business, see some pictures?
Yeah, you can go to our website,
suite907.com.
Sorry. We also have a great Facebook page that people are always posting on. So if you're on Facebook at all, just look up Suite 907. And we've been posting images of the dance floor and, you know, people with their permission, you know, some of the images from people that have come in. We've had wedding after parties there. We've had, you know, just turned 21 parties, bachelorette parties, things like that that people are coming in for. We did an Omni group event in there. So we've got some really fun groups coming in with, just a big variety of things.
We do have all age ranges. That's what I've noticed, is we have all age ranges and all different race types. So it's not like it's just geared towards one age group or one race. So it's really neat to look around at all the different cultures represented. And that's why we're trying to do, like, Taco Tuesday night, so that the salsa and Latin group in town want to have a place to come every week and have, you know, their favorite music and their favorite foods. And then also anybody in the community who's interested in that type of a thing could come and join in and learn. So,
yep. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on the show today.
Yes,
thank you
for
having us.
Up next is the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 13th of August, 2014. 1961, on this date, construction began on the Berlin Wall, cutting off East Berlin from the West, from the part of the city divided up by the British, the French, and the Americans. The Soviets had East Berlin, and after the war, millions of East Germans emigrated west. By 1961, they were leaving at a rate of 1,000 per day. So in the early hours of the morning, East German soldiers began laying down barbed wire, 100 miles of it, just inside the border. It's the birthday of the novelist Tom Perrotta, born in Garwood, New Jersey, 1961. Grew up in blue-collar Newark. Went off to college to study creative writing, but he said he didn't want to write for the people he met in college. He said, "I wanted to write for the guys I grew up with, who weren't literary sophisticates. I have an allergy to fancy writing." It's the birthday of Alfred Hitchcock, the movie director, London, 1899. His father was a greengrocer, and once when the little boy misbehaved, his father sent him to the police station, and they locked him in a cell for a few minutes to teach him a lesson. And Hitchcock, for the rest of his life, was so terrified of the police, he would not drive a car for fear that he might be pulled over. Alfred Hitchcock, who directed Rear Window, Vertigo, Psycho, and The Birds, and who said, "A good film is when the price of the dinner, the theater, and the babysitter were worth it." And it's the birthday of Phoebe Ann Mosey in Woodland, Ohio, 1860. grew up in poverty, helped to support the family by hunting. She was such a good shot that she became part of Buffalo Bill Cody's Wild West show under her stage name, Annie Oakley. Here's a poem for today by Margaret Hasse at the Tea Garden. My friend and I mull over the teas displayed in square jars with beveled glass labeled by type. Each name seems part of a haiku, after the snow sprouting, moon palace, mist over the gorges. I'm drawn to green teas with unoxidized leaves that don't wither, hold their grassy fragrance like willow under snow in winter. The proprietor offers real china for the Chinese tea. Animal bones, fine ground, give whiteness, translucency, and strength to the porcelain that appears delicate, resists chipping. The rim of the cup is warm and thin. My friend's lips are plush. Her lovely mouth opens to give advice I ask for. We talk about memory of threshold events, like a first kiss or a poem published. She can't remember. I tell her about my brother-in-law's chemotherapy, his third bout of cancer. He wants his family to put a pinch of his ashes in things he liked, his banjo, the top drawer of his desk, the garden. I wouldn't mind becoming part of a set of bone china that serves tea in a cozy tea house smelling of incense, cinnamon, musk, and carved teak. I'd like to be brought to a small table, sit between friends, quiet words, held in hands so close that breath on the surface of warm drink makes mist rise over their faces. A poem by Margaret Hasse at the Tea Garden, from Earth's Appetite, published by Noden Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Search is nationally recognized and award-winning Lifestyle Balance classes begin soon and you're invited. Lifestyle Balance classes are designed to help eligible search patients prevent or delay diabetes. Join the hundreds of people who have completed this class and learn how to improve your health. Sign up now. Classes begin in Juneau on August 19th. For more information or to register, call 364-4453 or email lifestylebalance@search.org.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here on KTOO, in the studio with Eric Scott, the director of campus life at UAS.
Good afternoon, Annie. How are you?
Good, and yourself?
I'm doing great, thanks.
All right, so tell me about the things happening at UAS right now.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of great things happening at UAS. I was just sharing with some folks this morning that I think that folks are going to look back in the history of UAS and think 2014 was an incredible year. We have a brand new dining service that's coming online here in the fall. We chose not to renew our previous contract, and we've brought in a new dining services manager who is cooking some excellent, excellent food. He's been fattening up the faculty and staff this summer with all of his samples that he's brought out. We have a brand new residence hall opening. I don't think that that's news to anyone in Juneau, but we are really, really psyched about it. The contractor has made immense amount of progress here in the last few weeks, and we're so excited to welcome our new group of first-year students here on August 27th with move-in. We have a reboot at the rec center. We're focusing on fitness and wellness. And we have an incredible, incredible, very engaged faculty and staff that's just so excited to welcome everybody back to campus.
Right on. And you're new to Juneau.
I am new to Juneau. So, yeah, I'm coming up on my six-month mark. Still getting used to the weather. Need to adjust my wardrobe a little bit. My shoes are soaked through here. But I'm getting there.
So which changes are you most excited about happening at UAS?
You know, probably the biggest thing, and I think it's the one that's on everybody's mind, is the new residence hall. We have had on-campus housing at UAS for quite a long time, but the great thing about this new hall is that it's centrally located. So it's right across from the Egan Library. It's very central to campus, and we have some immense, really awesome programmatic opportunities that we'll have. So we're hoping within the next year or two to start up a first-year experience program, which allows students to take classes as a cohort together. We're hoping to have an incredible level of faculty involvement and really integrate academics into the residence hall. One of the things that people see across the country in studies is that students that live on campus have statistically higher GPAs and are more likely to graduate on time. And so we are really appreciative of the opportunity to have more of our students living on campus, but now not only living on campus, but being very centrally located to everything that's happening there. So the hope here, those statistics that I'm talking about, they are reflected here at UAS. So we've actually been able to look through institutional research and see that our students that have lived on campus, they do have higher GPAs on average. We're hoping that that's going to bump up even more now because the students are going to be engaged directly on the center of the campus.
So who gets to live in these new dorms? Do you guys already know?
Well, so yeah, so students have been signing up for housing since applications went live. So first-year students are, of course, the priority. It is the first-year residence hall. And so those folks already have the room assignments, and they're really excited and ready to go. We also have a few opportunities for continuing sophomores to live in those spaces as well because we won't fill it with the number of students we have coming in on the freshman class that are choosing to live on campus. But certainly those students that are coming to campus that still want to live on campus, we do have a few openings left. And, you know, the best things about these halls, I've been walking around up them as the construction process is finishing up. You're looking out on literally some of the best views in Juneau. So you have this view of campus, and then behind that is Auk Lake. And then behind that, you can see the glacier rising up, the Mendenhall Towers, Mount McGinnis, everything. So it's incredible, incredible view that you have. And when you get it on a clear day, there's really just nothing like it.
Great. And there's still time to sign up for school, am I right?
So if for degree-seeking students, registration is closed, but we do still have registration open for anybody that wants to take classes at UAS. And so for folks that are thinking and teetering on whether or not they want to pursue a degree, this is a great time to sign up for some classes, and then they can become degree-seeking in the next semester, and those classes that they've taken, if they're strategic, will count towards their degree.
Wonderful. And can you tell me a little bit more about upcoming events? I mean, when's the first day of school?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, we have our first year move-in on August 27th, and then on August 28th, we begin with our first year student orientation. And so orientation is on the 28th and 29th. And something that we're really excited about with orientation, it's become a bit of a tradition now at UAS, is a whale watching cruise. And so in conjunction with orientation, all of our students will get the opportunity to go out and do whale watching, which is, you know, from what I understand, pretty much a Juneau standby, getting an opportunity to get out on the boat and see some of the wildlife. And then we'll have lots and lots of events and programs through that weekend. The first day of school is September 2nd, right after Labor Day. And then that Friday, on September 5th, we have what's called Campus Kickoff, which is a huge event that's held on campus every year for clubs, organizations, and local businesses and nonprofits to come and showcase what they have and hopefully recruit students to be part of the organization. So folks that are looking for employees or volunteers, they can definitely come out, set up a booth at the Campus Kickoff. All they need to do is contact our student activities coordinator, Tara Olson. And here's the best part. The price is only $30 for businesses to set up a booth, free for nonprofits.
Very cool. So what's your favorite part about school starting up again?
You know, I think for me, it's just the vibrancy of the campus. It just has a different feel when everybody's there. I chose to work on college campuses because it's great to be surrounded by engaged people who are pursuing inquiry on a regular basis and truly just have the joy of learning. And I think, you know, I've been on college campuses for about 10 years now, and I learn something new every year. And whether it's something that someone comes and shares with me in their class and then I go home and Google it, or whether it's a new culture or a new perspective, I'm always being challenged, and I'm always seeking to learn from the students that are there. And I think that's my favorite part.
Great. And where can people find more information about UAS and the exciting things happening there?
So probably one of the best places to find information is on the web, uas.alaska.edu, and you can use the tabs there to navigate information about student housing, about dining services. You can find information about upcoming events and activities. There will be a lot of opportunities for community engagement this year through the activities that we hold, as well as our evenings at Egan. So folks can definitely be checking those things out. They're also welcome to just come and stop by campus. Check out the new food service, check out the new residence hall, walk around a little bit. We'd love to have folks out there. Campus is growing, and it's just, you know, becoming a really, really great place. Well, it already was a great place. It's becoming a better place than it was.
All right. Well, thank you for so much for coming on a Juno afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it.
See you at UAS.
Take it easy.
This is BirdNote. How do you get started learning to identify birds? There are so many, and they hardly sit still long enough for you to have a good look. Well, David Sibley, who literally wrote the book on identifying birds, has some advice.
Spend time at home, paging through the field guide, and at first, names like Scoter and Vireo and Egret are going to seem strange and foreign, but by flipping through the pages of the book and looking at the pictures and reading the names, you'll start to get a sense of what those birds are, what makes a vireo.
From someone who's observed birds with great interest for years, here's a welcome note.
It doesn't have to be about seeing a lot of different species, but more about getting to know the birds that are common in your neighborhood or in your yard. It can be really rewarding at that level. Another thing that I think is incredibly useful for a beginning birder is to get in touch with a local nature center or Audubon chapter. Someone can take away all the uncertainty and say, yes, that's a song sparrow. Your first 25 or 50 species are the hardest ones to learn. So if you can find somebody who can help you with those, you'll have a really good, solid start.
We're ready to help, too, at birdnote.org.
Programming support comes from Harrison B., closing out his summer shakedown tour this Saturday at the Rockwell Ballroom with the Woolpullers and the Shiver Twins and premiering his new video, Me. Tickets at Brown Paper Tickets, Juno Pizza, and Rockwell. Information on Facebook at Harrison B. Music.
An important reminder from the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. The August 31st submission deadline is fast approaching. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on My PFD Info to check your current application status and review required documents. While you're there, add or change your UA college savings or pick-click give contributions. Keep current on PFD news by liking us on Facebook. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Revenue and aired by ABA and this station.
This is a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here with Mr. Andy Klein from the Alaska
Annie.
Brewing Company.
How's it going?
It's going great.
It's
better
great to
since
be on.
You walked in.
Yeah. Walked in, you know, anytime you walk in with beer, turns the room up a little bit. That's right.
Turning it up.
How are you doing?
Excellent.
I love listening to you on a Juno afternoon.
Well,
I love
you.
Listening to Annie on the spot, you know, too. It's one of my favorites, but Juno afternoon with Annie B. I love it.
This is the more professional version.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
But not anymore, not since the BrewDogs beer
that's
is here.
That's right, the BrewDogs, man. So the BrewDogs came up and filmed their reality show earlier this summer up here in Juneau, and they actually came up and hit some good weather, and they went and did a lot of different adventures. They did out and did some cool stuff. They got to the ice caves before they collapsed.
With Bill Glued.
They went out with Bill Glued. Bill Glued was the naturalist guy that they we hooked him up with Bill Glued, and Bill guided them through a lot of gathering of natural ingredients and that kind of stuff. And then they brewed a beer with one of our brewers, Steve Sano, one of our brewers, guided them through the process they kind of collaborated on the idea of doing a kvass. Their whole idea when they came up was, let's say we came to Alaska and all of a sudden we were stranded, like our plane landed and we were stranded on a deserted island.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time. What would we do to survive? What beer would we brew to survive? In other words, forget food. We got to brew a beer. So, and they decided to try to do it with only things that either they would have with them naturally on a trip or could gather, and brewing using only things that they had with them. So they actually don't know where they got the parts, but they took apart a float plane.
Jeez.
And made a brewing, an entire home brewing, 5-gallon home brewing apparatus out of float plane parts.
That's what I'd do.
Yeah, that's what they did.
Food, shelter, water,
yeah.
Beer.
So it was really cool what they ended up, the thing they ended up doing, the way it looked was amazing. It was a gravity-fed brewing system. They really did brew beer on it. And then we took that basic idea of that recipe, and then we brewed it on our 10-barrel system, and that's what we've got out now. It's going to be pouring at the hangar tonight.
Oh, wow.
We're going to be giving out samples. In fact, look, Annie, I've got some with me right now. Should we taste some?
I would love
Let's
to taste some.
Let's taste some. So this is a kvass and a kvass. The idea that we had with the kvass, kvass is a kind of an ancient-style beer. It's also called bread beer. It's a Russian-style beer. And it's made...
Jeff Brown just walked in.
Jeff Brown always walks in when the growler opens. Hey, Jeff, there you go. There you go. Delivering a little to you. So this is made with, there's a kind of a sourdough starter bread in it. There's some rye bread in it, which is the traditional way the Russians make it. It's usually a fairly light beer. So this beer, the alcohol content's about 5.5%, just a little bit less than 5.5%. And it's got some of the traditional kind of Russian-style hops in it, and a Pilsner malt, rye malt, and then birch syrup and spruce tips. So
Ooh.
That's some of the local ingredients is that birch syrup and spruce tips.
Can I drink it yet?
Yes, I think you should. So you can smell the spruce tips a little bit, I think. That piney, right? You smell that a little bit? And then it's got a little bit of a kind of a, it's got an acidulated malt in it, a lactic malt in it that gives it a little bit of a sour flavor, too, because these kvasses usually have a bit of a sour characteristic.
Definitely tasting the sour at the
yeah.
spruce tips.
Normally, it's that sour in a kvass comes from wild yeast because it's usually just bread, and then it's naturally fermented with wild yeast. But we don't use wild yeast at Alaskan Brewing because we have this one yeast strain that we vigorously protect at all times. And so the way that we got that sour, Steve worked with the BrewDogs guys, and they came up with this idea of using this lactic malt, which allows it to be a little bit sour. Mmm.
So good.
I like that spruce tips flavor. It's nice because that, you know, it always reminds me of the winter ale when you taste those spruce tips. But it's nice to have it in a different beer. The winter ale is a fairly stout, you know, beer, a fairly strong beer and a little bit of a heavier beer, which is wonderful in winter. But it's nice to have a lighter beer and have that spruce tip flavor in there as well. So anyway, that's...
And a golden color.
The survival beer made in collaboration with the Brew Dogs. And it was their first ever Alaskan collaboration. And one of our first ever collaborations, too, that we've done with other brewers that came in. So that was exciting for us as well.
And what was it like to do reality television? I mean,
yeah,
how real was it?
I'm sorry, I'm just picking up something up for it. It was, Brew Dogs, unlike some reality TV shows that are looking for drama and those kinds of things, it's a lot more like a cooking show in a way. There are hosts that come in that are real experts in brewing. They're two Scottish guys who started one of the most successful and fastest growing craft breweries in Europe. It's called Brew Dog Brewery, and it's based in Scotland, but now it's all through the UK, and it's all through America as well. It's distributed all through America as well, and craft bars all over the place. So they are expert brewers. They're expert entrepreneurs as well. I mean, they're very interesting and engaged guys, very smart. So it's more like kind of like having a chef come to a restaurant, you know what I mean? And it's not like a makeover or something like that. They just wanted to collaborate with us, kind of do things that epitomize being in Alaska. So they got to fly around on a float plane. They got to go to the ice caves. They went out to this island. They brewed that crazy beer out there. They kayaked, and they actually used some of the glacier ice from the ice cave
Ooh.
In the beer that they brewed. And so they, you know, they kind of had the full Alaskan experience. So it's a little bit of Alaska in a bottle there, just like all of our beers in Alaskan, a little bit of Alaska in every bottle.
Yeah. Right on. And what can people expect tonight on the Esquire channel?
I haven't seen it, but
no?
I've seen previous episodes. They show up, they try to, they not only visit the featured brewery, but they also go to other breweries in the state. So they also went up north and they went to other breweries. I think they went to Anchorage Brewing maybe and Midnight Sun and a couple others, and maybe Hoodoo Brewery up in Fairbanks and maybe Silver Gulch, I'm not sure, but they try to show the brewing scene in any state that they're in or any city or area that they're in. And they also try to do a couple of restaurants. So they went to Salt and to the Hangar here when they were here, and they went to Cafe Amsterdam and some other places up north. So it's a little bit of a profile of what the brewing culture is like in the state, and then a bit of a profile about the state itself and the kind of cool, amazing things you can do in Alaska. And then this kind of crazy idea of brewing using these used float paint plane parts and using a kvass. And Steve Sano, our brewer, was great. The stuff I saw them shoot together, was he was really fun and funny. And so they hit it off really well. And that stuff was really cool, too. So I think it's going to be really a fun show. So they always do something really different and wild, and it always tries to exemplify what the area that they're in and the beer they're brewing.
Cool.
Yeah.
And if people want to try it, how can they get a hold of this?
So this is going to be a very limited edition. It's on tap tonight at the Hangar. We're going to start pouring there at about 7 o'clock, and the premiere is at 8 o'clock. It's on the Esquire channel, GCI cable channel 26, locally being shown at 8 o'clock. The world premiere of this one is. And then they do repeats and stuff, so if you don't see it, or set your DVR, right? People have DVRs, right? Set your DVR. But if you don't get to see it at 8 tonight, check the local Esquire listings, and it'll play again as well. But come tonight to the Hangar and join us. We'll be giving out free samples of this, as well as you can buy a pint or buy a pint of whatever you'd like, and you can hang out with us and watch it. A bunch of our brew crew will be down there as well watching it, and we can talk you through it and have a great time.
All right. Sounds good.
You coming?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I'm going to be at the depot tonight.
Oh, the depot. Working at the depot. Working for the man.
Working for the man. Oh, this song's for you, Andy.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Strange Brew. Been a Juno afternoon on KTOO. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew. On tomorrow's show, Sarah Brown will be here from the Symphony to highlight the Juno Student Symphony Tour of Puna. We'll talk to Ann Johnson about Saturday's Eagle Crest Run. We'll hear what's happening in town with Sandy Fortier and Arts Up, and we'll get a preview of the Shakedown event with Harrison B. That, a writer's almanac, bird note, music, and more tomorrow at 3 o'clock on KTOO. This is KTOO-FM Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. In the Valley, Ark Bay area, tune to K276AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gus Davis listens at KTO1AM 88.1. KT20VT serves Hoona at 91.9. An Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait hear KTOO on K210AS 89.9. We're also online at ktoo.org.
are doing all we can as a government to ensure the security and safety of our health workers.
Ebola taking a high toll on health workers in West Africa.
It's Wednesday, August 13th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.